Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
This is Yasa Sagonie, a seventh great grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's a 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's a 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius.
I'm Austin Powers.
I like Gas Mojo.
The very sexy and very switched on, yeah.
But you gotta have Gas Mojo, baby, yeah!
What a gas, baby, yeah!
I'm going to go back to the 60s and steal Austin Powers' Gas Mojo.
Hi, folks, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of GasMojo.net Engine Booster. Immediate 25% fuel savings with GasMojo.net in just 5 minutes after installation. And your grandma can do it, so you just strap it on your fuel line, folks. Some customers report much greater savings. The GasMojo.net engine booster catalytically conditions any hydrocarbon fuel, be it gasoline, propane, diesel fuel. It's not a filter, it contains no metals, magnets, or toxic substances, and uses no electricity. The GasMojo.net engine booster unit is a specially designed tube containing a completely safe proprietary media. It's a passive fuel treatment process designed to disperse hydrocarbons for better performance and mileage, and also to break down carbon and other contaminants. Unlock your fuel's hidden energy potential now with GasMojo.net. And folks, you get a 100% money-back guarantee on this. I've got one on my car. It was developed by an old friend of mine, and he's an honorable person. You got to try it, folks, and go open a bank account now for all the money you're going to save. GasMojo.net, GasMojo.net. Just do it.
Hello, everybody. This is your old buddy, Blue Otter, coming to you from Booger County in the mysterious Ozarks in Mid-America. Our honored guest today is Mala Spotted Eagle. He lives at a place called Nanishante, and he's going to be telling us about the mission of Nanishante, and he's been working closely with Grandfather Corbin Harney of, I'm not going to get this right, Niue Sokobia. I think I got that right. But anyway, go ahead and introduce yourself. Mala Spotted Eagle, for the folks out there, you may also know him as the son of John Rolling Thunder Pope. Welcome to the show, Mala.
Thank you, and I really appreciate being here. And as you said, my name is Mollus Father Eagle. I am from the Western Shoshone people and the Cherokee people. My father was Cherokee. My mother was Western Shoshone. I grew up amongst the Western Shoshone. That's where my father chose to live also. And, you know, my father, for those who knew him, was quite a well-known Native activist and environmentalist and trying to help not only just British cultures, but help Native people to preserve their way of life as much as possible with what was going on. One of the ways that we did that he saw was a great need, was that at one point we knew that there needed to be a place for people to come together where that they wouldn't be taken advantage of, but that would be being taught what we call our spiritual way of life. Native people, that I've always learned, never really had what was called a religion. We had what was called a spiritual way of life. That means that it wasn't something that we practiced occasionally or on a certain day or anything. It was something that we put into all aspects of our life. And we recognized that a lot of people were looking for that in their life because they felt that there was something very much missing, and they saw the direction that the Western culture was taking them. So what happened was that they were unsatisfied with it. They saw that it was hurting the planet, the Mother Earth. It was hurting people. They were feeling alienated and alone, and they were feeling disconnected from the Mother Earth. They were not being fulfilled spiritually as they had hoped to. And many of them were turning to indigenous people and were turning to other cultures and ways, looking for something that would help them. So my father, my mother, and my family all agreed that something needed to be done to help these people, because we recognized that if we were going to help heal this Mother Earth and help change things that was being done that was hurting the Native people by the government and by society and by the ways that people thought of us, impressions, that we had to get the help of as many people as possible to change it. Because at that time, and even to a degree today, not a lot of people were listening to what the Native people had to say. They felt that we had very little value to offer, and that we had very little knowledge or education that was, so they didn't really listen. So we realized we had to bring in other people to help to change things, and they also had a need too. So our first community that we built was called Metatonte, and that was out in northeastern Nevada. And it was in many ways quite successful. There was a lot of people that came from all over that visited and lived there for different periods of time, and they were both Native and non-Native. And it was quite a learning place. And it was in a very hard environment, and there was a lot of struggles and some hard learning, but also some real good things. And in 1985, my mother, Spotify, crossed over. And at that time, my father felt he couldn't continue on either. And so it was made a decision to close the community, let a healing happen. So for some years that happened, and in the meantime, myself and my family very strongly spiritually were guided to come up to Oregon. And so that is where we went. And when we came here, that we were involved very much with Native tribes, Native communities, and organizations, doing the best we could to help in the ways that we've always been taught. But the community never left our hearts and just grew stronger with time of the need to do that. And we knew that we had been guided here for a purpose, and we saw people that were more open-minded, the hearts were more open to what we were wanting to do. And so we started looking and praying, and we didn't have no financial plan. We didn't have any money backing us, and we just did the best we can in our tradition, which was that if you believe in something strong enough that you will see it come into being. It's a little different in the way that in Western culture where seeing is believing, ours is believing is seeing.
Oh.
So we started really believing it. We wrote about it, talked about it. Pretty soon elders joined in with us. Corbin Harney, who's a strong anti-nuclear activist, spiritual leader. He's one of the main spiritual leaders of the Western Shoshones. And a very highly respected elder. He joined in. A number of other elders joined in. And quite a few Native and non-Native people joined in, believing in what we were trying to do. And as the energy built on that, one day it became a reality. And now that's what we're doing today, is we rebuilt a new community here in Oregon that is Native-guided, intertribal, interracial, and that what we're trying to do is to help be a bridge between the cultures so that we can work together for the preservation of the Mother Earth, to give something better to the future generations, and to help preserve our own culture, too, while we're doing that. To help people to learn about what we call our spiritual way of life. It's not about making them Indians. Only the Creator can make somebody an Indian. It's really teaching them a spiritual way of life, because we truly believe that at one time, all people on the Mother Earth had the same teacher, and that was the Mother Earth. That we all come from a tribal background somewhere, and that we all at one point had to live within the harmony of the Mother Earth, or we didn't survive as a people. So that Mother Earth taught us how to live in a proper way, proper respect, how to be able to do things in a more balanced way. And that's what we're trying to share with people. You know, we're not trying to teach them Indian ceremonies and things like that. We're trying to teach them, when you cook your food, how do you cook your food? You cook it, you put good energy into it. Your thoughts, your things you say, how you feel, all has what we call spiritual energy. That goes into what you cook. When you go out in the garden, when you take care of your animals, when you take care and talk to your young people, when you take care of your elders, everything has energy. We're trying to teach people to be responsible with that energy, to learn how to think about how to use it in a positive way and not a hurtful way. And we're trying to teach them, don't take the Mother Earth for granted. When you go out to the Mother Earth and you walk upon her and you pick up a stone, a shell, whatever it might be that you pick up, don't just pick it up without thinking. Think about your actions. When we teach our young ones, we teach them that when you go to pick up something off the Mother Earth, the first thing you do is take out an offering, like a tobacco. Tobacco, we, in the proper way of its proper use, we use it as an offering, because the tobacco, as every plant, every animal, everything on the Mother Earth has a gift within it, has its purpose here. Tobacco, one of its main gifts was that it's very sensitive. It feels what's inside of you. So when you pray with it and you hold it, that it also takes up what's inside of you, the prayers, the things that you're saying out loud and the things you're not even saying out loud. It feels what's inside of you. So when you pray with it, then you go to, like say if you were to pick up a shell, you would go to that shell and you would pray to it, and you would talk to it about why you want to pick it up. You would talk to it and say how you're going to utilize it, and ask permission to be able to take it. Not just take it for granted that the Mother's is ours to take. You would have to stop and think. And it would teach you some things by having to do that simple action. First, it teaches you that you have to stop and think about the action that you're doing. It teaches you also that that shell has a spirit, that it has a life that you have to honor, and that you have to be able to teach it as a, you have to be able to talk to it in a way that is equal with how you would talk to another person, and that you have to also offer something in return for what you take, that you can't just take and take, but you always give something in return so that you create that circle. So a simple thing like that has very important, strong lessons that can affect you always for the future. And that's just a very simple thing, one of the things that we teach our young people. There are many things like that we want to share with others, of how to live life in a better way, how to raise your animal, how to do all the things you do. And you can do many of these things wherever you are. One of the other things that we do is we say, you know, honor your elders, take care of your elders, because many people today now put them away in these homes. And many times elders do nothing but just wait for the crossing. They have not really no purpose. In our native societies and our traditional societies, our elders are so valued and needed. They were needed to pass on that knowledge, to be able to teach the little people, as we call them, so that they would carry on that knowledge. And the little people, by them passing on that knowledge, they would see great value in the elders. So we say, well, if you're in today's society in the cities, and you have both daycare centers and elder housing, put them close together. Put a common area between them. Then let your elders and little people mix. And then some of the elders will talk to them and pass on knowledge to them. And then that way they have purpose again. The little people will see that and start having respect once again for the elders. Because if you go out in today's world, many of the young people have very little respect, if any, for elders. They just think that they're a burden, something to be pushed away. There's so many things of how to use tribal values that you can still do it in today. And this is one of the purposes of Man and Shante, is to help and share in this. Because if you look around you at today's world, it's pretty obvious that there's a lot of things that aren't very good that have gotten away from the way they should be. And a lot of it is because we're getting further and further away from the ways of the Mother Earth. The more disconnected we grow from the Mother Earth, it's like the more harder and smaller that our heart becomes. Mother Earth is, we say, is our heartbeat. And so the further we turn away from her, the more smaller our heart becomes. And we need to get back to those ways. We need to find ways to do that. And what we share here at Nanashante, we believe, is just one good way. We believe there are many good paths to the Creator and to the Mother Earth. People need to find what's right for them. Those who are interested and learning some of these ways that the indigenous people believe and knew, then that's what we share, that kind of approach. We don't have all the answers. We're not the one and only good way. We're not those kind of people. And we don't charge for this stuff. In our tradition, you never charge for ceremony. You never charge for spirituality or for medicine. Those things were gifts from the Creator and from the Mother Earth, and those were to be passed on freely. Nobody owned them. That we're trying to just be an example for both Native and non-Native people on how to utilize the tribal values of Indigenous people and the Earth-friendly knowledge of modern society to be able to live and work in a way that is more in balance with our surroundings. We just also want to create a place, too, where elders can come and that they can feel good about the way they're treated, feel good about the environment they're in, and that they will choose people who they want to pass on that knowledge to. We have some of the elders that we're working with. They're in their 70s, 80s, and one of them's even in their 90s. And they're not going to be around forever. And they want to pass on their knowledge. But many times they're afraid to pass on because so many people today are exploiting that knowledge. Both Native and non-Native people out there, they're charging for everything that they can. That they've taken our ceremonies, they're taking the knowledge and trying to make a quick buck out of it. Because that's the only way that they seem to understand is to take advantage of everything. And those who do that really don't even understand what they're charging for. They go to a few sweat lodge ceremonies or a pipe ceremony or something, and then they go out there and pretend that they're experts in it and charge. If they really understood what they were doing, they would never even think of charging, because they would then be truly doing things in a more humble and respectful manner. They would understand about the heart and how it comes from that, and that you give from the heart freely, and that you don't go there and take advantage of people like that. So that's one of the things that we're trying to create, is a situation where that doesn't happen, that we have elders that feel good, or we have people that can come in and learn in those ways, and then also, too, that they can also pass on some of the knowledge that they carry, because we all have something to give, no matter who we are. And we need, one of the things that Native people need to learn is we cannot go back and live in the old ways, as some of us would really love to, but at least that we can create something by using the tribal ways, holding on to the values and ways of our people, yet trying to utilize the earth-friendly technology that is in today's world, trying to find these ways to work together. Because there is a lot of good out there. It's just the way that it needs to be used.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
We say, you know, it's like one of the things that some activists that really have their heart out there in a good way, but they still make one mistake. They go out there and try to help the Mother Earth or trying to help indigenous people, and they still go out there with the thinking that they still know what's best for Mother Earth. They still know what's best for the indigenous people because they're educated or whatever. The reality is they don't. You need to go and learn how to ask the Mother Earth what is best. Learn from the Mother Earth what is best. You need to go to indigenous people and say, how can I help you? And listen to them. And work as a partner with the Mother Earth, with indigenous people, with each other. Stop trying to act we're superior to others, to the Mother Earth, because that's what created the biggest problem in the first place. When you do that, then you're acting no better than those who are out there clear-cutting, mining, and doing all that things without any regard to who they hurt. And so we need to change the way of thinking. Pollution didn't start in the factories. It started in our way of thinking. Our way of thinking became polluted, so what we created became polluted. And that's how I believe tribal values can really help us out a lot, because it can change that way of thinking. And that's what we need to do. A story that I would like to share with you is in the last camp called Meditante that we had, one of the animals we used to raise was rabbits. And we used to raise, way over 100 rabbits. And we, using our tribal values, took a look at them and said, you know, this isn't right that they're raised in little cages. Their spirits will be weak. We've got to find a better way that honors their spirit. Yes, we need to use them for food. We need to use their skins for making things for us to utilize. But we need to honor their spirits, too. We need to do things better. So we thought about it. And in the end, we came up with the idea of building this huge It's about an acre and a half, 2 acre pin. And we dug way down into the earth, several feet, put fencing and pin and stuff down in there, and then we came up about 6 feet high with fencing, and we built a big barn on one end that opened up into the pen. And we decided to try to put the rabbits back on the Mother Earth and see what they would do. And we weren't sure what would happen, because rabbits, we don't know how many generations back that it's been since they've even touched the Mother Earth. Because the rabbits that we got, we would have to buy from other rabbit breeders, and of course they would all have been in cages. And so we wanted to see if we could help their spirit. We wanted to see if I was a rabbit and this was my purpose in life, what would be the best way I would like to live my life? And we realized that, of course, the most natural way possible for the time I'm on this Mother Earth. So that's what we did. We turned them loose. But both the rabbits and us had lessons learned, because this was something new. We were trying to bridge traditional tribal values with the ways of doing things today. We couldn't go out and just hunt all the rabbits we needed for food. We had to raise them. So how could we make this balance? How could we bridge this? So when we turned them loose, the first thing that happened, of course, was for several days, the rabbits, they just stood around. They didn't know what to do. I'd never touched the Mother Earth. And they just looked around and stuff. Finally, one of them started digging near the fence and dug down and made a hole. The others saw this and started digging too. So one by one, they all started digging holes, which was great. But first they made their holes wrong. They dug straight down, which a normal rabbit doesn't do. And when he dug straight down, of course it rained and the water went right down in the hole. They got wet. And then they started realizing they had to dig differently. And the next thing we noticed, within a day after that, they started digging down, and they went down about a foot and a half. Then they came back up, and about halfway back up, they started digging right into the earth and went and made the hole. They went and dug down, then partway up, and then partway over, and then down again, which is the way that most wild rabbits dig. So that when it rains, the water goes in the first hole and then doesn't go into the second hole. And they ended up getting more of their natural instinct back. So we thought that was really good. Then what happened was that we also noticed the bucks started fighting each other. Unfortunately, with the guys, it just seemed like no matter how much room they have, they just wanted to be the top, well, not dog, but top buck in the pen. And they literally shocked us, was that the male rabbits would try to fight to the death to be the only one. So we had to separate them. We had to build very special pens for them where they could be on both the Mother Earth but be totally separate. I guess it seems like the guys just can't get along sometimes when there's too many females around. So unfortunately, we had to do that. So then we ended up having one buck for about 100 does, and you can imagine he was a happy buck. So that we got that problem solved. So the next thing we noticed is that after about 2 or 3 weeks, and this seems to be going good, that we started losing some of our rabbits, and we kept seeing more and more disappear every time we go in the morning to feed them. And so we put some guys out there to watch all night. And what they reported back was there would be these big owls that would come in during the night, land on top of the posts, and the rabbits, because they weren't used to having to fend off any kind of predator, they would just sit there on top of the ground and look at these owls. Sure enough, the owl, after it decided which one it wanted to take, would come down, grab it, and take off with the rabbit. Well, when a rabbit gets caught like that, most people don't realize it, but a rabbit really screams when it's in pain. So we decided we shouldn't do anything about it. The rabbits had to learn, because we couldn't be out there every night trying to protect them. And the pen was just too huge to put a top on. So we watched for a few more days, and we noticed that it shook up the other rabbits when they hear this other rabbit scream. And they finally put the two and two together that when Alf came, that meant a rabbit was going to be hurt. And so within a few more days, we noticed that when the owls started landing, the rabbits would run down into their holes. So finally they started running. The thing through all this that we also found out is that they changed physically even, not just spiritually inside, because we noticed the rabbits became much happier. They weren't afraid of humans, that they were, that they seemed to really get along and do things in a much more natural way. But they physically changed also. If you take a rabbit that's been caged all its life, the meat is very soft and white. And these rabbits changed to becoming more like the wild rabbits. Their meat became darker, and it became much more muscly, much more firmer. And it was really interesting how they reverted back to that. And so, you know, we really felt like in the end, we found a way to raise them in a way that helped to honor their spirit and made them to give them the chance to be more closer to the Mother Earth. And when they were given that chance, after a little while, their instincts came back that were connected to the Mother Earth. And the other thing that we thought about, you know, how are we as human beings, as the two-legged, how are we so different than those rabbits? You know, we've disconnected ourselves from the Mother Earth, and I've heard many people say, like, especially European Americans, they say, oh, our ways, we've lost them for so long ago, we'll never get them back. We don't know what to do. But the reality is, if you give yourself the chance to be closer to the Mother Earth, find ways to connect with the Mother Earth again, that your instincts, your spiritual instincts will come back again, and you will start changing on all levels, just like those rabbits did. To us, that was physical proof that it can happen. And it can happen for all of us, for all life, if we're just given a chance to get the Mother of the Chance deal. We give ourselves a chance to start healing and connecting to the Mother Earth again. You know, for someone that wants to know how to connect to the Mother Earth, just go out there once a day at least and pray to the Mother Earth. Talk to the Mother Earth. Give her an offering to give her thanks for everything, every day that she gives to us. And do it from your heart. Find a way to do it. However you can do it, just go out there and pray to the Mother. That Mother Earth, our Mother Earth, never walked away from us. We're the ones that walked away from her. We're still her children. And all we have to do is pray to her and turn around and be there with her again. And she's still waiting for us. She's never abandoned us. We're the ones that separated us. So that's all you have to do. If you would do that, somebody goes out there and with their heart, not just words, but every day, try to do it with your heart as much as you can. See the Mother Earth as a living being. See that how you are connected to the Mother. Your body comes from the Mother. Your clothes, everything you eat, everything you do of every day comes from the Mother and goes back to the Mother. So you are not separate. You are directly connected. You're not greater than any other form of life, and you're not less than any form of life. You're just part of the sacred circle of life. And if you can learn to see yourself in this way, if you can learn to go and step onto the Mother Earth and pray and give thanks to her and honor her and try to learn to be a little bit better caretaker, you will find, as you do this, little by little, you start breaking down the barriers that you have put up from childhood. Little by little, you start changing inside, and you start opening those doors again. We put so many blocks when we were growing up. In a Native way, we believe that our little people are very sacred and are very connected to the Mother Earth and to the spiritual world. When they're growing up, they don't have all the junk inside of us that we do now. They don't have all the blocks that stop us from being next to the spiritual world or next to the Mother Earth. What they do is they have spiritual experiences. Every one of us have had spiritual experiences, but most of us don't remember them. When you're young and you're little, You hear the wind, and you may hear the singing of the wind, and the trees and the leaves. You can maybe see spirits. You maybe had a connection with an animal or a bird or an insect. Whatever it is, you may have had dreams that were sacred, whatever it might have been. There were many ways that the spiritual world was trying to talk to you when you were little because you didn't have the blocks. Then as you are getting older, you question those things. You ask your parents, your friends, others, you know, you say, I had this dream, or, you know, I felt like this dog or this bird or something was trying to tell me something, or, well, you know, that I sort of knew this thing before it happened. You know, there's many things that you get, or you might say, I have this feeling. But because of the way that society brings you up, they say, that's your imagination, or don't talk that way because people think you're crazy, or that's just a coincidence. They have many ways to carry that, and one of the biggest things when you're growing up is you want to learn to be accepted. You want to be able to be a part of the group, part of the family, and that means being accepted. And when people tell you that you're saying something that's not in the right way, that they're trying to tell you that it's your imagination or coincidence, because you want to be accepted, it starts putting doubts in your mind about it. And pretty soon you start believing that. And as soon as you do, you're starting to build blocks in you. And pretty soon you start believing that, oh, that's nothing more than a dream. Oh, that's really nothing but a coincidence. Oh, yeah, it was just a whim, my imagination. And pretty soon you even forget about those things because you don't hear them anymore. You don't see them or feel them anymore. So those things really never really happened. It was just something that you imagine, and you forget all about them. And then we forget about them as we grow up, that we had those beautiful spiritual experiences. And then some of us, as we grow older, want to get back to being a more spiritual person. And we strive so hard to get back to what we already had. Part of Nanashanti is helping our young people to stay strong in those ways, to guide them in the best way we can so that they can retain that. Because we believe we need really a lot of good, strong leaders out there helping the Mother Earth. And if we can help these young people to do that, then imagine what they would be like as they grow older and have been able to keep that way all their life. Imagine what their young people will be like and their little ones continuing on. But each generation, if they were able to keep those ways. And then I have to stop and think, imagine what our elders used to be. Imagine what our ancestors used to be like. And then it helps me to understand a little bit when they say that someone that walks a spiritual way of life, or one that who knows how to learn how to truly walk and balance on the Mother Earth. And that's what our ancestors used to do, because they had that support that was taken away. And that's one of the things we want to get back. It's one of the things we need to give back to all our young ones, whatever spiritual path it is, but help them to stay strong in that way, to not take it away from them. Help them so that they will keep their hearts strong to the Mother Earth and be able to be strong leaders someday. So this is some of the stuff that I wanted to share about Nanashanti. You know, one of the things we did is we got away from the reservation. We couldn't deal with the tribal politics. We always said tribal politics was worse than even American politics. Mm-hmm. Because our people many times knew better, knew differently, yet sometimes because of the suffering and things that they've gone through in life, they would choose for the money, they would choose for the power. And they would end up really hurting each other. And you never knew which way it would go from tribal election to tribal election. So we knew that if we were going to work with all people, not just people from different tribes, but all people, we had to get away from the reservation so that we wouldn't be at the whim of tribal politics. So we went and finally found some land and was able to eventually raise the down payment. And now we're just in the first stage of rebuilding and creating a community where we can do these things. And
folks, you can take a look at nanish.org, N-A-N-I-S-H.org, and you can click on the community link on the left-hand side. You can see pictures of, it's just beautiful there, Mala. It's absolutely gorgeous what you've done.
Thank you. Well, we do plan to do a lot more. Like I said, we're just in the first phase, but we haven't even been here a year yet, and we're working on really trying to raise funds that hopefully in the spring we'll be able to start building some elder housing. We've got a healing lodge that we want to build, and we've got to build a lot of support facilities like a barn and some sheds for our animals and fencing. There's a lot of things, but you know that we have that faith. We have the faith that somehow we'll find a way to do this, and we're doing it from our hearts because we really believe in it, and we're going to do it in a way that hopefully can help a lot of people and help the Mother Earth. And through it, we'll be able to help our own people and help strengthen our own culture and traditions by sharing it with others.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of Native Remedies. As the systems of the body are interrelated, proper functioning and health occurs when they are in balance and harmony. So it's important to consider taking a holistic approach to caring for your body. Provided that they are manufactured in the correct way, natural medicines can work quickly and safely to create holistic balance in the body to support systemic health, relieve ailments, and help prevent future disease. Most natural remedies do not produce negative side effects, and unlike conventional medicine, natural remedies do not just mask symptoms, but they get to the root of the problem to support health and affect healing at the same time. Most homeopathics are even safely taken by people of all ages and during pregnancy. Homeopathic medicine is actually suppressed here in the United States. Outside of this country, a large majority of medicines that are prescribed are homeopathics. Did you know that the cure for malaria was developed by the man that invented the homeopathic system? That's right. So friends, please take my advice. Visit the front page of prophecykeepers.com and click on the Native Remedies banner and find out what all the excitement's all about.
Well, we hope this interview will help you out. This interview will be archived permanently so that anybody that comes to your website can just click on the interview and listen to it. Want to do everything we can to help you.
Well, I really appreciate it, and that's what it takes. Is many of us working together with mutual respect from where we're coming from that are all trying to help in the healing of the Mother Earth and all trying to help people in a good way. And that's what we need to do. Well, I really thank you for this opportunity to share, and hopefully that maybe it'll touch some people's hearts.
Oh, I know it will. I know it will. Why don't you tell me a little bit, you're nothing without your wife. I've never met Sky, but I've seen her pictures. Why don't you tell us about Sky and about your four children? Now, Red Wolf, he's on the Native Prophecy Council, so we hear from him quite often. But I've corresponded with one of your brothers, I believe. But just tell us about the family.
Well, Sky, her tribal heritage is Tlingit Indian from Alaska. Obviously, she is a lot of the strength that's behind me, and actually, I'm totally 100% positive that I probably wouldn't even be doing half or a third of what I'm doing without her strength. She's always pushing me in front. She doesn't like to be much of a talker, even though she's got a lot to share. She sort of pushes me in front. She says, I'm the talker. Sometimes I'm not sure that's such a compliment, but... She was trained by my mother. My mother had a lot of knowledge about the clan mother ways and the women ways. And Sky was the one that she passed on quite a bit of knowledge about that too. And then Sky's also been, has, of course, received knowledge from her tribe and from others that we've been around. And that's what she tries to do is, we were a matriarchal society, and women were a lot of the strength, a lot of the main strength of our society. And they were the ones that sort of took care of the whole way of life in the community, that they helped direct it in a good way and keep a good balance so that things didn't get one-sided or the other. That, you know, the men, we have our own strengths and our own weaknesses as much as the women do, and there was a good balance kept. And that's what she tries to do, is help out with keeping a good balance, and she makes sure that I stay humbled in her own good way. She tries to teach people, but especially the women, about the women's ways, the moon custom, women's ceremonies, ways that the women cook or did certain things. And, of course, nowadays men help in the cooking and other things too, but, you know, that she makes sure that they're done with in the ways of tradition, you know, with the good energy put into things. And sometimes when I can talk into it, she does go out and share the knowledge that she'll lead a talking circle, especially women's circles. She's getting more and more into doing those. One thing I admire about her, she doesn't put out any titles or any fronts for herself. She just says, you know, she is who she is, and she just shares that. And she's very shy about it, like a lot of our Native people are. But, you know, that she also sees the need for sometimes sharing that knowledge, because it does need to get out there to help others to learn to think and do things in a different way. Our children, we're very proud of all of our children. One of the things that we believe in, and that I was taught, is you don't force yourself on a Mother Earth, each other, or ourselves. And that includes your own children. You don't force your ways upon your children. They're not yours. You don't own them. That you're there to guide them. And that's one of the things that we've tried to do with our own children. And it's just to guide them, to be a good example for them, and let them choose a path that feels what's right for them. And all of them have felt very strongly about the Native ways, and about, and each in their own ways, finding ways to support Anishinaabe and finding ways to follow the path in a way that's right for them. My oldest son, Michael Thunder Eagle, he lived back in Nevada where we came from, because by the time we left, he'd already started a family. He had a really good job. He's a firefighter. Fighting forest fires and brush fires, and he's still doing that. He's been doing that for about 12, 13 years, and you know, he still follows and believes in it in the best way he can, and he's always there being very supportive. Red Wolf, he's our second oldest son, and he's very involved with a lot of Native ways. He's a traditional dancer, plus an Aztec dancer, because that was what came to him in a dream to do, so he followed that. And then also, he's very much involved in trying to create a nonprofit to create a lot of Indian organizations to work together, and he's also very involved with ways to try to help the Mother Earth as a whole. And he's one of the ones that we hope will, when they take over doing a lot of the speaking, because he's also a very gifted speaker, and things come to him very good in a very natural way. Our daughter Winter Sparrow, who's the next, next oldest, she's got together with a guy, their partners. He's part Native and part European American, and they open up an organic coffee shop, and they're really hoping that it will, when they produce enough revenue, that it will help to support Anishinaabe. That's one of their dreams.
What town are they in?
They're in Salem, Oregon.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it's called the Dragonfly Coffee Shop. It's one of those fair trade coffee shops. It's all organic, and they try to do things in the best way they can. and they try to support a lot of environmental and activist causes too. And our youngest son, Huna Siptong, what we call him, Huna, that means badger claw in Western Shoshone. He's still in high school. He's in his last year. And, you know, he's still right here with us in the Anishinaabe community. And he helps out wherever he can. And he in the past, he was a grass dancer for some years, which is a certain type of traditional dancing. And he also has a lot of strong feelings. He likes to learn about traditional ways and, you know, that we'll let his path open up as it seems to. And so, you know, that's the way we want to do this with all young people, is not to push our ways upon them, just to guide them in the best way we can.
Well, some of your, Peter Elaine Henwood or Earth Thunder was telling me about a little bit about how your dad taught you some of the ways, and I understand you spent quite a bit of time away from home in a wiki-up when you were little.
Oh, yeah. There was when I was younger, I think I was about 12, 13 years old, I had this dream of building a wiki-up, and I wasn't sure what it was, but I saw how it was all being done, and ended up building it. So I went to my father and told him about it, and he says, well, go build it. So I actually did that. I went out and got it to Willows and kept remembering my dream and built it. And when I was done, that's when he said, oh, you built a wikia. And then I covered it over, and I moved into it. And I lived in one for about 14 years.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was some of the happiest times of my life. In fact, well, now that we have this land, that's one of the things we're going to build is some wikis here. Because I'm really hoping to move back into one.
Wow.
It's definitely you live a much more simple life, but it's like an upside-down basket with willows that are totally interwoven and that they're really made in a very tight way. And it can be pretty large. You can make them pretty huge. We made them to where up to where 8 or 10 people could easily live in it. And they went through some very severe winters and with no problem.
Yeah, the summertime, they're just open up enough where they give you perfect deep shade, but it allows air to flow through, and they're real nice in the summer. And then you can insulate the heck out of them in the winter, can't you?
Yeah. Yeah, we lived in them right all year round.
Wow.
And Sky lived in one with me, probably about 8 or 10 years, you know, with me. And in fact, all our children were born and raised, you know, around that they grew up in the camps.
Wow, what fun. I want to tell the folks a little bit about, do you remember the story, some of the stories your dad told about how he met your grandma, how your grandpa, I guess it was his grandfather, met his grandmother, and remember the story about how there was a fellow sweeping up in the enrollment office, and they found out that the money was changing hands, and white people were getting enrolled on the Dawes rolls, and the word got out, and there was a warrior movement. I guess it was about 1905, called Snakes. And you feel like telling that story? do you remember?
Well, to be really honest, I'd sort of like to leave that story. I have a personal reason for leaving that story, and if you don't mind that.
Sure.
You know, appreciate you mentioning it, but I'd sort of like to.
Or anything else you feel like, how your dad, because I know your dad grew up, from what I understood, he was taken out into the mountains and had to build his own cabin. I guess all he had was a knife.
Well, the thing was that, back in his time and my mother's time, that Indian children were pretty much by law taken away from their parents, usually around age 5 or 6, and that was taken to boarding schools. And that my mother unfortunately went through a boarding school, and she remembers the horrors and things that happened there. And and he used to tell me a little bit about that. My dad's parents agreed that they didn't want him to go through that. So he was sent off into the mountains with his grandmother, who had never ever come down out of the mountains. He didn't really want anything to do with the Western society, so she was still living up in the mountains, hidden out. And so that's where he got sent when he was young, until he was about 18 years old. And but at one point he started off living with my grandmother, and at one point as he got older and learned how to build things and do things, he did go off and build a cabin all of his own, and so spent time in that too. And he grew up, you know, learning a lot of the ways from his grandmother about how to live close to the Mother Earth and learn some of the ways about medicine and how to connect.
He was born, what, about 1915? 82 when he walked west, right?
He was probably born right around there.
January 97, I guess he walked west. He's been about 1915 or so. So
he was born in 1910.
Oh, that, okay. I was thinking he was only 82 when he passed. And it was.
Yeah. No, he was
87 then.
September 10th. Oh wait, I'm sorry. You're right. I was looking at the wrong. He was born in 1916.
Yeah, so
September 10th,
1916. Yeah. And the Kaimichi Mountains. You know, I had no idea. You know, I live in the Ozarks, and. But I trucked through the Kaimichi one time. They had a horrible accident right at the exit for Hot Springs, and I had to get to Houston with a load, so I had no choice but to get off Hot Springs, Arkansas, and then head west. And I'll tell you what, those mountains down there, they're a lot rougher than the Ozarks, and I guess that's where your dad grew up, was in the Kaimichi. And there's some pretty rough terrain, not like the Rockies, but very closed in, a lot of rills and ridges, and heavily wooded and absolutely gorgeous.
But do you know that my dad always used to say, to him, the rural wilderness was what they call civilization, mm-hmm. and that to him, what was called wilderness was truly nature and home. That, you know... He said you could go into a city, but you never knew who to trust and what they meant, and you never knew what could happen to you from one moment to the next. So he says when you're in nature, they're not like that. They're not manipulating. They're not. Nature is one way. If you learn to understand nature, you can live very easily in harmony with nature. That you understand what it is capable of. What it may do to you, and yet you also understand what you need to do to live in harmony with it. And it's not going to turn on you for no reason at all. You know, that. So to him, nature was much more secure. You know, nature was a much more peaceful place to be. No matter how rugged or how hard it might be, it was all there in a good way. It was just like he always taught me. He said, you know, that when people think of cold or hot, you know, that usually they always think of it as something that's not a good thing. That they're always complaining that it's cold or complaining it's hot. They're always talking about the nature in a negative way. And he said, you know, that it's a way of thinking, you know, that you just turn it around. And he said, look at what the cold does for Mother Earth. It blankets it. It helps insulate it. There's a lot of seeds and other life that needs the cold to be able to grow again. It helps to purify and cleanse. And that, you know, he said that what you have to do is take a look at it and look at it as a thing, as a gift, and that it's there to help us. If you can go out into the cold and really think of it in this way, then you're going to find out you feel a lot less cold. Because as soon as we go out into the cold and we start thinking, oh, it's already cold, then we build it up in our mind and we make it much more than what it really is.
Oh, yeah, I understand you went to, did you go to DQ University?
For a little bit, yes.
That's what I remembered. I know I went through the youth leadership program at Brigham Young, and it was so much fun learning the snow camp, and you learn how to live in nature, and it is so much fun. And tell us a little bit about the Ganawita Quetzalcoatl University.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of wisefoods.org. Our native ancestors stored away lots of food in case of emergencies. Thousands of years of sad experience taught them to be prepared. The traditional Hopi stored food enough to last for 7 years. So did the early Mormons. Nowadays, everyone unwisely depends on supermarkets for their food supply, and few people know that there is only a 3-day supply of food in the American food supply chain. Now, should some disaster befall us that would cause the big trucks like I used to drive to cease delivering our food, you'd be in big trouble. It is for these reasons that my family purchased a year's supply of 3 different breakfasts and 10 delicious dinner entrees from wisefoods.org. These foods are freeze-dried right at the field where they are picked and processed and are fresher and more nutritious than any supermarket food. You just add hot water, and they're good for 25 years being stored. A year supply from wisefoods.org fits in an area about 4.5 feet by 4 feet by 18 inches. I can literally get it all in the back seat area of my Honda Civic. If you stay at home, you won't need to go to a FEMA refugee center should some disaster happen. Did you know that David Ramsey, David Gallagher, Laura Ingram, and Michael Medved have also invested in Wise Foods? Why don't you visit wisefoods.org today and see why?
Well, actually, I was just out there about 2 or 3 weeks ago for a powwow. That university used to be an old military base, and one of the things that is in the law that should any government property come up as surplus,
mm-hmm.
that Native people have a right to apply for it,
mm-hmm.
because it originally was Native land.
That's what Alcatraz is all about, right?
Right. So what happened is that was an old military base. It had been decommissioned and for some years. So the Indian people applied for it. Of course, they were getting turned down and without a valid reason. And so they wouldn't accept, well, that's what was supposed to happen, that the Indian people could use it. And the intention was right from the beginning to use it in some place as a cultural center or as an educational place or something to help the Native people. And so what happened was is that it ended up that the Native people, after being turned down every avenue and that the law wasn't being applied like it was supposed to have been, that they realized that the only way to get it was to occupy it and to make so much publicity about it that it would force the government to be able to hand it back over to the Native people. And so that was what was done. I'm not exactly sure how many days it was, but it was quite a while that they had to occupy the place, and they were usually surrounded by the military, and eventually that enough publicity was put out about it, and many tribes were there, of course, American Indian Movement, but there were many, many tribes that supported that land being turned back over to the Indian people for better use, that eventually enough publicity happened that it was turned back over, and now it's been made into the university for Native people and Hispanic people. Because, you know, the way we believe is that actually that there are not really Mexican people, as you call them, because we never drew that line there. It said Mexico, Canada, United States. We were all just different tribal people. We were all here live in the ways that we were taught how to live on a Mother Earth.
Yes, Cherokees came from down there. Our Catoo and Wampum belts are tied in Mexican seaweed.
Right. So, you know, that's why that we wanted to create a university or a place that would honor all tribal people on this continent, that they could be together, learn together, work together. And so eventually that's what happened, is that it became that. And it's still going today. It struggles, but it's still going today where there's, I'm not sure how many hundreds of students that it has, but it has several hundred students that are all of Native origin that are going there. And, you know, there's been a lot of struggle and a lot of good that's come out of there.
Yeah, their website's at dqu.edu. California's two-year accredited tribal college.
Right.
What year did they occupy it, Mala?
Oh, my gosh.
Was it before or after Alcatraz? Probably after, huh?
It was after Alcatraz, but I'm trying to remember what year, because I was there. I wasn't there during the occupation, but I showed up like 2 years right afterwards. And when they were, or maybe it was even less, because I know that they were just getting going and getting struggling, and I enrolled at that time. And at this point, I'm sorry, I'm getting older. But
yeah, you know.
So.
Oh. But like recognized in 94 as a land-grant college. And fascinating story. I know I've read some stories about, here it is. 1970, the Army vacated the site that became federal surplus, and Native peoples gained the first and only indigenous-controlled institution of higher learning located outside a reservation in July 71, when DQ University opened its doors for the first classes. It became Indian-controlled in November of 78, so they fought for over 7 years.
Yeah.
After lengthy negotiations, the federal government awarded Deakin University title of the land in 71. So it took them a year to get it, and they had to go through hell to get it. And I wish the same. You know, I wish that the same circumstances would have worked out as well for the Danning sisters as it did for them, because, you know, with the day I met your dad was the day that the Northern Shoshone boys had set himself on fire. And,
oh yeah, Richard Dan.
And that is such a sad situation, because the federal government had a treaty with them, and of course that's where they test their nuclear weapons. So I don't know. That's really.
You know that a lot of Western Shoshone have come up with what's called thyroid cancer.
Oh, sure.
And the reason is that most people don't understand why Indian people are getting thyroid cancer at a lot higher rate than other people. And the reason is that when they did the above ground nuclear testing, not only did they expose all those people, but the most non-Native people get their food through grocery stores. Grocery stores get their food from all over the United States. Most Native people were still eating, a majority of their food came from the land,
yep.
From the rabbits, from the deer, from the berries, the roots and stuff, which were all still contaminated with nuclear poison.
Yep.
So we kept getting more and more doses without knowing that. And even myself, I have no thyroid at all, because I ended up getting thyroid cancer also.
Yeah.
And a lot of our people have gotten that, and many have died, or many end up with no thyroid.
Yeah, it'd be nice if they told you about potassium iodide, which blocks radiation. It was just really a raw deal. But you want to tell the folks a little bit about the Dan sisters, and this is an ongoing situation with the Dan family, and you feel like telling them about that?
Sure. Well, the Dan sisters, for a long time, what happened is that they're a Shoshone family that is out in a fairly desert area, and they raid cattle and horses. Well, one of the things is that the Shoshones have had a treaty with the U.S. government that it was one of what was called peace and friendship. The Shoshone people were never beaten in war. That at the time that the white people finally got around to the Shoshone people, or the Western Europeans, that they were going through their own civil war. And that the troops that they did send in to attack the Shoshone people, that what happened is they were beaten back by the Shoshone dog soldiers. Well, they decided that they couldn't afford to fight all these battles. So they asked for a treaty of peace and friendship where they would guarantee the Shoshones would have the rights to these lands, and that they would just have enough, the Western Europeans would have enough right to pass through our lands unmolested, and could build like forts or something or little towns right along the trails that they passed through. Well, of course, over the years that what is called encroachment kept happening more and more. So, but the Native people still said, well, you know, this public land is still under our treaty rights, and has never, we've never taken money for it, we've never given it up by any written ways. And so we still had the rights to it. And then when we tried to graze cattle or horses, then the government would come around and say, look, you know, we're going to take your cattle and horses from you because you don't have rights to this, that we own it. And we said, no, you don't. Well, I have treaty rights. We still. So it started getting to become disputed. Well, the Dan sisters decided that they were going to, the only way that this was going to get resolved is they needed to challenge this. Because they grazed a lot of their horses and cattle on what is called public land, but was part of our treaty rights. So they said, well, we're not going to pay our fees to you anymore because our rights, this is our land and treaties, that we shouldn't have to be paying for this. So we're going to just raise our cattle and horses on it like we've always been doing. Well, the government, of course, said that if you do that, or the Bureau of Land Management said if you do that, we're going to take them away from you. So it started becoming a battle, and it started getting bigger and bigger, and a lot of Shoshone Indians believed and started backing the bands, and a lot of other Indian people did too. And it became a big issue where that people that we really appreciated from all over started coming out to the dance and saying, look, we're going to support you. We're not going to allow the government to come in and just take your horses and cows. And, you know, that they ended up having a permanent encampment out there near where they lived to help watch over it because the government would quietly come in and try to take them. And when they started blocking, well, it became a lot of battles where nothing of a really heavy physical nature, but it would be like blockading roads or trying to stop them from coming in. And they started going through the court system. And pretty much all the lower courts agreed with the Dan sisters that they were correct, that the treaty never gave up our land rights and stuff. But in the end, I believe it was the Supreme Court that finally said, even though that this treaty is valid, there's no way to honor it. If we honor one treaty, we have to honor all treaties, and they're not going to do that.
Yeah, well, you know, the big thing is national security, because if they honored the Treaty of Ruby Valley, you know, where the government did its nuclear testing, then, you know, who knows what would fall out from what rock, you know?
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, that the nuclear testing they're doing on our tribal land, they never even told us that that's what they were going to use that land for. You know, that they just started doing that. And unfortunately, that didn't. They still consider Indian people wards of the government, and as such, that they feel they can do whatever they want with our land, and many times even with us. And they've done this nuclear testing on our tribal land, and what a lot of people don't realize is they continue today to still do nuclear testing on that land. They reclassified the nuclear test as what they call subcritical nuclear test. And what they do is that they use all the same components of uranium and everything to set off the atomic bombs. But what they do is they say they explode them to where they just stop barely at the point of reaching critical mass.
Mm.
And the problem is they've even admitted that sometimes there's been a number of mistakes that's happened where either that they went beyond critical mass and did go further, or that there were where that it would crack the ground and big leaks of gas, radioactive gas would come out. Just different things. They've had a lot of problems. But a lot of people don't even understand that they're still setting these off. They're still doing a lot of damage to the Mother Earth pipes. And, you know, that if we were trying to get the word out, because we really believe that if a lot of other countries really understood what they were doing, that then it would go against the Test Ban Treaty, which I guess Bush anyway is trying to get out of anyway. You know, so, you know, that they still use that land in a way that we've never agreed to, and they're still doing a lot of damage. The only thing that I was glad to see was that recently that where Bush had put in for to start a lot of the nuclear arms thing up again, that appropriations was denied. But I'm sure that, of course, they have their own ways of getting around that, as they usually do, get around everything. So we're still, though, our people and other people still meet at least once or twice a year out there in a big demonstration for about 4 days. The main one we call is called Mother's Day Gathering, and that happens around Mother's Day for about 4 days. And we gather there, and we do a lot of talks. We train people about proper use of civil disobedience, because we don't want violence to happen there. And we do a lot of ceremonies, you know, to help those who want to do it in a spiritual way. And we bring in elders from all over to talk about situations that are going on in other places. And so, you know, anybody's welcome to attend that when that happens.
Yeah, you can read about what's going on with the Western Shoshone Defense Project at WFDP.org. Lots of good information there. Well, you know, if you whatever you feel like you're talked out, keep talking as long as you'd like, but
be careful. I might not stop.
Hey, people are loving it. I'm loving it. You remind me so much of your dad here, but you're your own guy, but I can sure hear the echoes.
Well, the thing is that it's just something you believe in. You know, it's not something that you're out there trying to make a name for yourself or make money off of or whatever. It's got to be something you truly believe in your heart, that when you see these things happening and you see that there's a better way of doing these things, and if you want to see something better for the future generations, you want to see something better for the mother, then you do something about it. We've got a lot of people who do a lot of talking, but we each need to try every day to do something for the Mother Earth in some way to help them, even if it's a little, just in some way to help. You know, and that's what we try to help others to understand. Don't just talk your life. You know, do something about your life. Live your life. So many people out there are just existing today. That's all they do. They go and work a job. They live for the weekends or vacation. And that's about it. And that's not much of an existence. That's basically all of it is just trying to exist. You know, we try to teach people, every one of us has a gift within us. Every one of us is here for a purpose. You know, every one of us needs to be doing something with our life. I was with Corbin Harney one time, and we'd gone to this tribe. She was invited to go speak at this tribe that had just been recently reinstated as a tribe. And they, because that they had not been a tribe for quite a few years, that they pretty much had lost most all their traditions and ways. They were trying to figure out how to do them. And one of the things that I was in this room with a whole lot of elders, And one of the things that Corbin said to them, which shocked all of them, is he said, I don't see anybody here that seems to be really alive. He says, what are you guys doing? He says, yes, you're trying to reestablish your tribe, but what is each one of your personal dreams? What are you doing to live your dream? Not...
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
Owning a car or house or things like that, what is the dream that truly would make you happy as a human being? What is it where you want to be in life to be able to turn around today and feel happy about who you are and what you've done in life? What is your goal? And he says, each day you should make some kind of step towards that. You should know what it is. Whether you ever reach it or not, it's not always the most important thing. But it's the journey of getting there. Each day you should do something, because if you do something every day on that journey, then you feel like each day has meant something, that you're alive. You're not just existing. It's not just a day that you just existed in, but it has purpose. You're working towards something that's more than greater than yourself. You're working towards something that you believe in, that's going to make a difference and try to help in some way, to do some good in some way. And each one of us needs to do that. Each one of us needs to find that. And... you know, it's just something, you know, I've seen so many people out there who just feel like, what can I do? I'm trapped. I can't do anything. But all of us can, no matter what it is. Each one of us can make the changes in our life to make that difference, to find something that gives us purpose in life. We all have that within us. But we find so many reasons and so many excuses of why we can't. And sometimes that maybe even means giving up a little of the comfort that we have, or making changes that we don't really want to make, even if we know they're better for us. But we have to find those ways to do that. One of the hardest things is that we get to places in our life that are comfortable, even if they're not the best place for us to be. But it's because we know that way, even if it creates problems sometimes for ourselves or for others, it's a way that we know and behave and stuff, because that's a way that we understand. We're comfortable there. We can each day just do the same thing over and over, and we know exactly what to expect in return. But that's not spirituality. That's not growth. You're not growing anymore. You're just existing. Growth sometimes is very uncomfortable. Most of the times it is. It's having to look at ourselves, having to make the changes that are hard within us. And we need to do that. We need to find those ways that can do that. we need to be able to really live life in a way that it was meant to. And so,
how can folks help support Nanish Shunting?
Well, there's numbers of ways. I mean, we need people to come here and help volunteer that have the right intention. It's not a place that you're going to just come and sit down and hear elders just speak and speak and speak. It's a place where you're going to come here and help out with the work, help out with the way of life, and you learn by doing. It doesn't mean that sometimes out in the evening we don't sit around a fire, sometimes we don't drown or something, because we do those things. But it's not a place where you're just going to come in and pay some money and, oh, you know, I don't have to do anything but sit here and listen. That's not who we are. And if people want to come here, we don't charge them, but we do ask that they can, if they can afford to, help out with their own food and their own personal expenses. And then they can help out in the work, and we try to help them to understand how to do things differently. And we do need lots of people that can help out in that kind of way. Also, too, that if people have things that they think might be of use for the community, that we are a nonprofit organization. We got a permanent 501c3, and they're willing to always donate it, or if they're willing to, they can always donate it and help us out in that way. I would suggest first call and make sure it's something we can use.
Like building materials or vehicles or?
Well, we can always use a vehicle. Our vehicles are all hitting around 200,000 or more. So, you know, they're all pretty old. But, I mean, yeah, it's a community, so we can use educational materials because we want to get a school going. We can use building materials. We can use library materials. We're trying to build a library that's full of native books and also earth-friendly technology, those kind of issues.
Yeah, means computers.
Yeah, computers, office equipment, supplies. We're trying to do a lot of canning. We can use a lot more canning supplies. There's a lot of things like that.
Folks could send you cases of canning lids.
That's true. Definitely.
Or just the jars you're in, but the can. You can get jars, but you know if something happens with all the imbalance with Mother Earth, you're going to want to have tons and tons and tons of those. Because you know sometimes you can reuse those canning lids, but you know you're going to have thousands of those.
And one of the things that we're really trying to get at this time also is a tractor. We're trying to get a tractor because we need to try to get a kind that eventually we can put a front end loader and like a little backhoe on it and stuff, because we need it for a lot of the building and the gardening and just a lot of things around here. So it's one of the things we've been really looking for. And then also, too, if people just want to make a financial donation, of course, then we can write them a receipt and they can get a tax deduction. But you know that really each person needs to take a look at their own personal resources and where they can feel they can help in a good way.
Right. Well, if you got a good nonprofit attorney, he might explain to you about something called planned giving. That's where if a person feels like they want to donate, you know, all or part of their life estate, you can make arrangements legally that they can donate it prior to their death, and with the agreement that they can live on it until they walk west. That's how a lot of the endowments are so important to nonprofits. That's half of what the Boy Scouts of America, the way they do their funding is through planned giving and endowments. And certainly, I've never heard of any Indian organizations getting involved with it, but they're sure a good way, a good long-term way to get involved with nonprofit funding through planned giving.
Yeah, it's something that we should look into because it's something that we've never done yet. But you know, I do know that you're right that a lot of nonprofit organizations, and it's something that would hopefully maybe be possible down the road for Nanishante.
Yeah, so I did my bachelor's degree in nonprofit agency administration, so I learned a few little things about it.
Well, that's where we can all help each other. That's what I'm always saying is, you know, that there's always a way that we can all benefit each other and work together.
The biggest thing nowadays is grants. They're very, very important. But for long-term, you know, if you can, go after the endowments and planned giving because, you know, there's lots of folks, especially women, people aren't aware that the wealth of this country is in the hands of a small amount of older women, because men tend to die early and they leave the wealth to their wives, and women have more giving hearts than men, so it's a matter of having to go out and knock on the doors and sending people your proposals, and I know you're doing that. But it's in corporations and really having to be aggressive to really get anything done. I know we're going through it with Foxy Keepers Radio. It's really shaky, but it's been a real education for me because, every month it comes down to the 25th and the creator micromanages.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely amazing. You know, I couldn't have done this even a year ago. I would have gone nuts. Oh, I couldn't do this, and I just would have been in despair. But now I'm laughing about it. So,
yeah. And one of the things I did just think about, but I wanted to share too, is that you know we talked some about Manashante and his goals and different things too. But you know, we're talking about ways that possibly help support it. Well, some of the things that we are wanting to get as soon as we can financially do it is. We're wanting to create a youth cultural camp here where we can bring in not just native youth, but all youth that would be interested and bring them in at different times of years in groups and have them learn about how to connect to the Mother Earth and about how to, the value of the life around them on the Mother Earth and about some of our native traditions and ways.
Well, see, I've got a personal friend who lives 6 miles from me that says, I think he's already written a curriculum for such a camp. He's a doctoral fellow, did his master's degree in education, and he was in outdoor recreation. He was a close confidant of the traditional chief of the Yankton Sioux, who some years ago ran for tribal chairman and passed away. But he wanted Dick to be the business manager for the tribe. And of course he didn't win his bid for election, but Dick is recently, and Dick's an elder, but recently he's been up to Canada, you know, been working with the Cree and as a tribal coordinator, and I think he could really help you with he's already got the curriculum ready to go for what you want to do, and he will not charge you.
That would be really great.
Yeah, and he's a mixed blood Cherokee like myself, a Powhatan Cherokee. No, I'll get him in touch with you because the curriculum is 95% of the deal. If you got that in writing, then you know that's how they run public schools. Is everything's written down and mm-hmm. You don't it doesn't have to be written in stone, but I sure would like to. To see that Little Red Schoolhouse that your dad, I understand he dreams of a Little Red Schoolhouse, and with Cherokee syllabary burned, you know, wood burned up above the blackboard,
mm-hmm.
and louvered windows, I understand it was something he wanted, and I understand he had some dreams, and dreams take a while to come to reality, but you got to just keep them in front of you.
Yeah.
Well, that's super, and you know if you work things right, for instance, this time of year as the deer head over, you know you guys could take donations of venison, right?
Oh, very much.
Well, you know,
would never turn that
down. Yeah, absolutely, and you just gotta hang your shingle on. Now, I guess originally you were thinking about buying an older closed down. Cause some kind of a treatment facility, but I guess you had to go someplace slightly different. And,
we put a lot of effort. There was a place that had two dormitories and a fair amount of land and not as secluded as this, but somewhat secluded. And we worked with the people for over a year, and just as we were getting ready to sign papers, one of the owners of the property, when we reached our final negotiation, that they decided that they wanted more down payment, they wanted better terms, they wanted, and they started changing it, and we tried renegotiating with them, but the main thing is that wherever we went, we felt it had to happen in a good way, and when people started getting greedy, we felt like, okay, the energy is not right here.
Yeah.
And we'd put in over a year into that, trying to get that spot, and we'd invested some money and a huge amount of time. But you know that to us, it was all part of the steps to get where we needed to go.
That's right. I know your father and mother would agree.
Well, I really appreciate this, and you know that I hope that what this will do is that those who bring it, that some people will contact us, we'll make new friends, and find more people to work together with, and maybe someday you can come visit us too.
Yeah, I am not doing much traveling. I understand there's somebody out there impersonating me. I heard yesterday from, there's this guy that comes on the Native Prophecy list, claiming to be both the true white brother and the Messiah. And he was telling me that I had been out to the medicine wheel it's amazing, you know, the stuff that gets around.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I've had a lot of that about
impersonation.
I've had so many people say, you didn't know it, but I was your father's apprentice. And I've had many people say, you didn't know it, but, I hear other people saying that they're going around claiming to be Rolling Thunder's son or Rolling Thunder's daughter. And I just, there's so much of it going on, and it's pretty hard to stop it all, but I realized in the end, the main thing is that, you know, if you confront the people, don't lose your own integrity, do it in the best way you can, and then let it go from there. You've done your part, and just the main thing is keep who you are, do the work you need to do, because you can get so caught up in that negative energy that you lose the energy for anything else.
Yeah, well, I told this guy, just spell my name right, you know.
That's
such thing as bad publicity, you know.
Yeah.
Well, we sure appreciate you being on Frosty Keepers, and I know if there's any time you get in to a position where you feel very strongly that you want to come back on, just let us know. We'd love to have you back on, and even if it's a brief message to let folks know about, you know, events or this or that, just feel free to send me an email, and we'll get you back on for a short one, and maybe I'll get to Red Wolf on talk about what he's doing.
Oh, that sounds good. I'll mention that to him.
Okay, very good. Well, thanks a lot, Mala.
Well, thank you, Blue Otter, and I hope things go good for you, too.
Okay. Until next time, folks, this has been Prophecy Keepers, and bye now.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases.
I'm Austin Powers. I like Gas Mojo. It's a very sexy and very sweet store, yeah.
But you gotta have Gas Mojo, baby. Yeah!
What a gas, baby. Yeah!
I'm going to go back to the 60s and steal Austin Powers' Gas Mojo.
Hi, folks. This is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of GasMojo.net Engine Booster. Immediate 25% fuel savings with GasMojo.net in just 5 minutes after installation. And your grandma can do this. You just strap it on your fuel line, folks. Some customers report much greater savings. The GasMojo.net Engine Booster catalytically conditions any hydrocarbon fuel, be it gasoline, propane, diesel fuel. It's not a filter, it contains no metals, magnets, or toxic substances, and uses no electricity. The GasMojo.net engine booster unit is a specially designed tube containing a completely safe proprietary medium. It's a passive fuel treatment process designed to disperse hydrocarbons for better performance and mileage, and also to break down carbon and other contaminants. Unlock your fuel's hidden energy potential now with GasMojo.net. And folks, you get a 100% money-back guarantee on this. I've got one on my car. It was developed by an old friend of mine, and he's an honorable person. You got to try it, folks, and go open a bank account now for all the money you're going to save. GasMojo.net, GasMojo.net. Just do it.
Look inside the rainbow, look inside the heart. again. Let the wind blow. Let the truth be
Thank you.